Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Hey, it's August 11th, and it's program 308 in the series. We have sat across the studio council for 308 shows. How have you done that?
Wow, I'm feeling like I must be a very patient person.
You deserve a huge medal.
I know.
And we have classic radio shows all the way till 2 a.m. because this is our long show. Saturday we do 3 hours. And on Sunday, we only do 2 hours.
Well, I think this is the regular show, and tomorrow's the short show.
Yeah, I guess so. We have Gun, Will Travel from 1959. Good Western starring John Daner as the man called Paladin. Then Groucho Marx stars in You Bet Your Life from 1957. Then Don McLaughlin stars as David Harding, counter spy. Three classic radio shows until 2 a.m. right here on the WGN Radio Theater. But right now it's time to play Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
The movie is The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Did
that's
you see
a
it?
Great movie.
Oh, good.
Terrific.
You got this
movie.
One, Carl?
Hilarious movie.
Okay.
Yeah,
you,
I think
you got this one.
I feel pretty confident about
good.
It.
Great.
All right, what do they win?
Oh, we're going to give away two tickets to the Chicago Women's Funny Festival.
Yeah,
you know
funny
about that?
Festivals, like a funny bone festival?
Like funny like you, funny festival.
Funny like how?
But
like I'm a clown?
But it's women. It's the nation's largest celebration of women in comedy.
Oh, okay. So that would not be me then.
Yeah, I said similar, you. But not exactly.
All right. Fantastic. Yep. Where's it playing?
It's at Stage 773.
All right. Very good. If you want to win some tickets, give us a call right now. Play the game with us. The number is 312-981-7200. Curtis Koch is our producer.
Yay.
Tonight
thank you.
And tomorrow, and he will be taking your calls. We'll take the fifth caller. Call right now. We'll play the game right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Jan on the phone. Hi, Jan. Do we have Jan?
For years, even when you were on the other station.
Oh, we're so glad that you made it through. Congratulations on being the fifth caller. And we're so glad you got through.
Yes, can you tell me the movie? I didn't hear it.
Of course. Ooh. The movie is The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, don't listen to Carl. He's not usually a big help, but we'll see what we can do here, okay?
Okay.
All right, quote number one. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to say this looks fishy. Quote number two. This deal smells fishy. Where do I sign? Number three. I knew there was something fishy. I never got the cause of death.
All right. What do you think, Jan?
Which one you like?
One, two, or three?
I'd say three.
Three. I knew there was something fishy. Carl, what do you think?
I think it's number two.
Number two. The deal smells fishy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it.
I knew there was something fishy. We never got the cause of death.
Jan, you know what you're talking about. You're a winner. I told you not to listen to Carl. You know what you're doing. Congratulations. And Jan, we are so excited to give you two tickets to the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. It is the nation's largest celebration of women in comedy. What an amazing event. It's at Stage 773, which is on Belmont. It runs from August 23rd to 26th. It is the 7th anniversary Chicago Women's Funny Festival. It features a melting pot of comedic genres. It's got everything from highbrow musical improv, relatable stand-up, character-driven sketch. It is going to be funny. Right, Carl?
Yeah.
Carl's funny.
I know. It's funny.
All right. So for tickets and information, you can visit 773.com or you can call 773-327-5252. Jen, thank you so much for playing. You are a big winner here.
Thank you. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It sure does. Take care.
And Jan, stay on the line because we want to get all your information.
Okay, thank you. Huh?
She's a big winner. She won great tickets. And I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I might be able to hook you up, Carl.
All right, we'll see about that. All right, we're gonna start things off with Have Gun, Will Travel, but I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a text in line, and we absolutely love your text. It keeps Lisa up. Normally, she falls asleep by about the second show, so if you text in, she will have something to do while the classic radio shows are playing.
So we're getting a lot of texts. Text in. I read them all. I don't respond to every single one, but I do appreciate your text, and I'm reading every one
snoring,
of them.
Snoring, so please text in.
That's the only way I can
stay up. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, time now for Have Gun, Will Travel. You know what, Lisa? If I was a cowboy back in the 1880s, this is the guy I would have been. Paladin.
You would have liked to have been.
I would have been him.
Oh, you would
have. In fact, I may have been him.
Maybe I've been reincarnated. Good.
Yeah, I think that I was Paladin.
I bet you think that.
He was pretty cool, man. He kind of kicked a lot of butt out there back in the good old Western days. He dressed in all black, and he went by one name, Paladin. Like, you know, he was the precursor to Madonna or Cher.
Right? I think that sounds a lot like
him. Yeah, you know, he just went by Paladin. And he lived at the Swank Hotel Carlton in San Francisco. He dressed in formal attire. He ate gourmet food. He frequented the opera. He was a ladies' man. But when he was working, he dressed all in black. He had a derringer under his belt. His calling card was the chess knight emblem, and the symbol referred to his occupation as a champion for hire. Came to radio in 1960, and it was a very popular television show as well. Paladin was played on TV by Richard Boone, but on radio by John Daner. And we have an episode for you now from November 22nd, 1959. This is called The Landfall, and it stars John Daner. Here's part one now of Have Gun, Will Travel.
You won't stop me from getting these logs through. My gun is pointed at your man's head. Now put your rifle down, or he'll be a long time dead.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Yes, who is it?
It's Head Boy.
Well, come in, Head Boy.
No, can't open door, Mr. Paladin. Arm is full.
Oh. All right. Wait a minute.
Oh. See, Mr. Paladin?
Good heavens, what's all that you're carrying?
Baseball things. You remember you said you teach Head Boy how to play baseball? Hey, can bring stuff in, set down?
Well, yes, of course.
He's off. Oh, it's a great heavy mess learning to play baseball.
What on earth are all those things supposed to be, hey boy?
Bats.
Bats?
What do you think, Mr. Paladin?
Well, it looks like you brought every kind of stick you could find.
Oh, you saw wide ones, skinny ones, fat ones. Hey boy, have many basketball players to choose from.
Oh, I see.
Hey, sir, shall we get started, Mr. Paladin? Hey, but I want to tell all members of Chinese Imperial Dragon Club about your baseball. You take your bat now?
No, not now. Hey, boy, I've got to finish packing.
Oh, you leave today?
Well, yes, I thought you knew.
Oh, to see Macy Mitchell in Washington Territory?
That's right.
Oh, hey, boy, think you leave tomorrow.
Well, you've been so busy buying up all that baseball equipment, you've lost track of the days. You want to help me finish packing?
Yes, sir. So sorry, hey boy, forgot.
There'll be plenty of time for your baseball lessons when I get back. You'll have all winter to practice.
Oh, you think Imperial Dragon Club have good team by springtime?
If they're as interested as you are, It should be one of the best teams in San Francisco.
Oh, very good. This make a hey boy very important man in club.
Elizabeth Mitchell had been in San Francisco attending a finishing school for young ladies when we met. We attended many parties together for a period of months. Then, during one of my absences, she left with no indication as to where she was going. Now, 6 months later, I had received a telegram from her saying that she was the owner of a logging camp near Palmer Junction in Washington Territory and that she needed me. I took a steamer to Seattle and there rented a horse for the ride into the Green River section of the Cascade Mountains. There was snow on the ground, and the air was strangely still as I rode through the tall, timbered mountain country.
All right, you've come far enough. Just stop where you are, mister.
All right.
Get down off your horse. You're a stranger in these mountains, ain't you?
You always shoot at strangers?
Nobody passes here. This is Mr. Hoffman's camp.
Well, look, I mean no harm to Mr. Hoffman. I'm just looking for another logging camp that belongs to Miss Mitchell.
Mitchell? And you turn around and go back where you came.
I've come too far for that.
Axel, what's going on there?
Stranger, Mr. Hoffman. He says he's going to that Mitchell.
Joel, give me that rifle. All right, now. Now, shall we find out what this is all about?
I've got you covered, mister.
Yeah, and my pistol is pointed at your man's head. Put your rifle down or he's dead.
No.
The rifle. Put it down.
All right. Who are you?
Makes no difference who I am. I told this man I was going to Miss Mitchell's camp, and that's where I'm going.
No one is allowed to cross my land to get there.
Then I'll go around.
No, you won't. I own all the land surrounding our camp.
All right. In that case, I'm going through. And Axel here will guide me.
No.
I think you will. Get up.
Now, Mr. Hoffman.
On your feet.
What he says, Axel. Mister, if you come to help her get those logs through, you're wasting your time. I'll stop you every way there is.
All I know is I've come because a lady called me. Now get out of my way.
Constipation is something people don't talk about much, but it can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Well, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say.
A laxative should be effective, gentle, as close to natural acting as possible, and a medicine that can be used with complete confidence.
Now, X-Lax has been popular with many doctors and millions of people over the years because pleasant-tasting chocolated X-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. X-Lax is gentle. Next morning, it gives you the closest thing to natural action. And that's why many doctors and millions of people use X-Lax with complete confidence. X-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity, gently, overnight. Is X-Lax in your medicine cabinet?
Under the circumstances, the man called Axel was only too happy to direct me to Elizabeth's logging camp and then depart from my company. It was a typical camp with a sturdy main cabin, a cook shack, several other buildings for the work gang and the tool sheds. But something was wrong. There were no men working, and felled logs lay scattered about on the ground. They should have been in stacks for the trip to the mills. I dismounted and walked toward the cabin.
Paladin!
Hey!
Paladin!
Elizabeth!
Is it really you?
Oh.
Oh, I'm so glad to
Elizabeth,
see you.
Elizabeth, it's good to see you too. Now here, let me just have a look at you.
I've changed, haven't I?
Oh, well, you're just as beautiful as ever, but I never expected to see you in these surroundings.
Well, this camp belonged to my father. He left it to me when he died 6 months ago.
Oh. Is that why you left San Francisco so suddenly?
Yes. Come on inside where it's warm. Oh, Paladin, I knew you'd come.
Well, you know, if your neighbor had his way, I wouldn't be here.
Oh, then you met Mr. Hoffman.
Oh, yes. And the giant, what's his name, Axel?
Axel Grundle.
Yeah.
Hoffman's woods boss. Sit down at the table and I'll pour you some coffee.
Good, I could use some. Elizabeth, why did he try to stop me?
Mr. Hoffman is the reason I sent for you. I need a man like you who knows his way around a gun. Here you are.
Thank you.
You see, after Father died, Hoffman bought up all the land that surrounds mine, and he won't let me cross his property to take my logs to the mill.
I see. Well, how many men do you have in your crew?
My crew quit when they heard Hoffman had hired Axel. That man is the devil himself, and he'll make killers out of every one of Hoffman's men. My men were simply afraid, that's all. Max, my woods boss, is still with me. And then there's Jeff. He was a very good friend of Father's, and now you.
Well, we ought to hire some good men to work for you.
No. Until I get paid for the logs on the ground, I can't afford any men. There's money owed on this land as it is. And if I default on the payments, Hoffman gets it.
Well, how's that?
He bought the bank stock.
Ooh. He's kept himself busy, hasn't he?
That's the first portion of Have Gun, Will Travel, starring John Daner. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We've had a really good initial response, Lisa, to the Classic Radio Club. We launched this last week. A lot of people have signed up to it. Folks, if you do not know about the Classic Radio Club, I want to tell you a little bit about it. We have started a club where each month you'll receive 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time on 5 CDs in a collector case. Now, if you join right now, just go to classicradioclub.com. You will see the first 5 CD collection you'll get. Now, it has 10 shows on there. The 10 shows are Abbott and Costello, including The Who's on First, Sam Spade, Dimension X, X-1, Escape, no, not X-1, sorry, Escape, Fibber McGee and Molly, Gunsmoke, Have Gun, Will Travel, Inner Sanctum, Jack Benny, and Suspense. You like all those shows, right, Lisa?
I do. I mean, I like some more than others, yeah. But I do. It's a great great start to a collection.
Right. Now, you get these 10 shows, 5 CDs, regularly priced at $39.95. You get it for only $4.99. I mean, that's quite an, I mean, that's like a dollar a CD.
It isn't like it, is it?
It's a dollar a CD. Yeah,
you
and
go.
You get 2 shows on each CD. So now each month you will get another 10 shows on 5 CDs. Those will be $14.99, so an extra $10. But these are regularly $39.95. So introductory offer only $4.99. And then after that, $14.99 plus shipping and handling. But the best news of all, Lisa, there are no duplicates. No matter how long you're in the club, each month we'll send you 10 shows. You won't get any duplicates, and you'll get the best of the best of my 100,000 classic radio shows.
That's because we have an infinite amount of radio shows.
Well, 100,000 is not infinite.
Well, you last said time there's I no checked. Duplicates.
Yeah, but last time I checked,
so
100,000 is an infinite is a finite number.
Okay.
I was pretty good in math because you know when I was in college,
you started to be an astronaut.
Yes, I took up space. All right, so
we've heard that one before.
Never.
No,
I've never said
one,
that joke
it?
Ever on the air. All right, so check out the Classic Radio Club to learn all about it. Just go to classicradioclub.com. Classicradioclub.com. All right, time now for the conclusion to Landfall on Have Gun, Will Travel.
That noon, Elizabeth fixed lunch for us, and I met Jeff and Max for the first time. It was apparent that these two men had a deep respect for Elizabeth's father and had now transferred that devotion to his daughter. They had been trying to do everything they could to stop Hoffman from taking over the land, but they admitted that it was almost impossible. After lunch, Max showed me around the camp. Well, Max, what about Hoffman's woods boss? What kind of a man is he?
Axel?
Yeah.
Oh, shucks, he ain't no woodsman. He's a sailor, worked out of Seattle. He's a crack shot with a rifle, though, I know that. He started taking pot shots at the boys while they were working. Scared them all off that way.
Uh-huh. Then he's strictly Hoffman's strong-arm man, is that it?
Yeah. And that's why I brought you out to my shed here. Here, come on in. I got something to show you. It's hid under my bunk.
Max, I'm more interested in seeing what equipment you've got for stacking those logs.
First things first, Paladin. Yeah, here she is.
Well, would you look at that? An old Jennings rifle.
Ain't she a beauty?
Yeah.
Still shoots, too. I figured you'd be all for going after Hoffman's gang with guns blazing, so I've been loading shells for it.
Max, I'm not here to kill people. The job to be done is to get those logs to the mills.
Can't be done, Paladin. We got no men. Even if we could stack them logs, there's no way to get them through. There's too much snow. No roads out, no engine, no team, nothing. Nothing but my old Jennings and that gun of yours.
Maybe there is a way to get the logs out.
How? Ain't a man here can top a spar tree. I can't climb no more, and Jeff don't know how.
Well, tell me, Max, how much equipment do you have for moving the logs?
All of it. That ain't the problem. We could move this whole mountain of trees, but not without a high rigger.
Maybe I can do it, Max.
You? Oh, you ain't no woodsman.
I think I can trim a spar tree.
Somehow I doubt that. But even if you can, how are we going to get them logs to the mill?
Max, how long has the air been still like this?
What kind of a question is that?
The air. It's standing still. It's strange. How long?
Oh, 10-12 days. Why?
I'm not sure. I was just thinking about something an old Indian chief told me one time.
What was that?
Well, I'd rather not say right now. Maybe he was wrong.
Even if you've had embarrassing dandruff for years, you can get rid of it now in 3 minutes. That's all it takes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Yes, unsightly dandruff's gone in 3 minutes with Fitch, quickest, easiest of all leading shampoos. What's more, using Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away. Just apply in the unique Fitch manner. Before you wet hair, rub in 1 minute. This way, Fitch shampoo penetrates right down to the scalp. Next, add water. Lather 1 minute to wash every trace of dandruff out of your hair. Then rinse 1 minute. All that loosened dandruff goes down the drain. In 3 minutes with Fitch, one rubbing, one lathering, one rinsing, dandruff's gone. At the same time, gentle Fitch can leave your hair up to 35% brighter. To get rid of dandruff problems forever, brighten hair too. Use Fitch regularly. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. Only 59 cents.
Look out below.
Miss Elizabeth, I never seen nothing like it. You told me that man was a gunman.
Only if he has to, Max. Mr. Paladin's a good man to have around.
Sure is, ma'am. There's only one thing.
What's that?
I don't agree with where he picked that spar tree.
Why?
Why, it's too close to that old dry riverbed. If we're going to stack logs, let him get closer to the road where we can get a team up here come springtime and get him out.
Springtime's too late, Max. It's now or never.
All right, Max, gun. Send up that block and ropes. And we'll stack the logs.
What's use of it?
Do what he says, Max.
Come on, Max. Move.
It wasn't easy to get Max to agree to stack the logs where I wanted them, but finally the job was done. Now it was just a question of wait and hope. This went on for a week. Max and Jeff were getting edgy. It was all Elizabeth and I could do to keep Max from trotting down to Hoffman's place with his old Jennings rifle. But finally it came, what I had been waiting for. A Chinook wind. It comes, some people say, out of an old Indian's dreams. Others say it's the devil's breath on a particularly bad day. All I know is it came in dry and hot, and it lasted for 2 days.
Doggone it, Paladin, you was right. A Chinook wind. It's working. That snow's melting like it was summertime.
Look at that water come down.
Paladin!
Well, that's Jeff.
Where'd he been anyway?
I sent him down to the riverbed.
You're right, Paladin. Hoffman's onto our plan. Got Axel and his men building a log jam down below. According to law, he can claim every log that floats down there and stops on his property.
Concern him, Paladin. Let's go down there and shoot them all dead.
Max, if you don't settle down...
Paladin, you can't stop the logs from going now. The water's rising so fast, they'll be starting.
Wait a minute. Max, how much black powder do you have?
Enough to blow this mountain up. We use it for blasting out tree stumps.
Good.
What are you going to do?
Jeff, you know how to use a pike?
Sure do.
All right, then. Now, you make a skid jam here. And when you hear a shot fired from down below, start the logs down. Will you do it?
You bet I will.
All right, come on, Max. Let's get that black powder.
Higginbotham here. We will now commence our lesson in stereophonic reproduction. Listen to the call of the spotted billsnicker on ordinary stereo. Now then, on a Columbia Stereo 1 phonograph. Obvious difference, what? The Columbia stereophonic system really causes all others to blush. For it is not composed of just a few separated speakers. Columbia is the originator and exclusive purveyor of stereo projection. Only Columbia fills every inch of a room with real, lifelike sound. Now, when I was birdwatching with the Duchess of... But let that pass. You simply must hear the Stereo 1 phonograph by Columbia. Ask your Columbia phonograph dealer for a demonstration. And, chaps, portables are priced as low as $39.95. Consoles commence at $129.95. Blast that bird.
There they are, Paladin, sure enough.
Yeah.
Lay those timbers where they'll count the moves.
Look, that axle's right in the middle where we got to plant this powder. How are we going to move him? I know. I'll shoot him from here.
No. If they hear the shot, they'd start the logs from up above. Now listen carefully.
Yes, Paladin.
Max, I'll draw Axel off the jam they've built. Now, while I'm busy with him, you plant the black powder out there. Can you do it?
Did I do it. Right smack in the center, all them logs that got stacked up.
That's right. Then get off the log jam in a hurry. I'll throw a shot at it and blow it up.
All right, Paladin. Good luck to us.
Right.
Hey, you. You, Axel.
Call my name.
I did.
You. What do you want?
I come to fight you. I hear you were the toughest man ever to go to sea.
You scum. I'll fight you. This time without a pistol at my head. I'll kill you. I'll break you in two.
Oh, no, you won't, friend.
Come on, Axel. Use your gun. My bare hands. I'll kill this man.
Get out of the way, Axel. I'll shoot him.
My bare hands. I will. On you.
I killed him.
Yeah? You killed your own man.
I didn't. I never meant this to go so far. It was a mistake. Will they hold me for murder?
Yeah, I suppose they will. Even Axel had a right to live.
Paladin, that shot. You started the logs.
All right, get off the jam, Max.
You see where I put the powder?
Yes, I can see it, but get out of the way.
Paladin, here comes the log. Shoot, shoot quick.
All right, Max. There they go.
You made it, Paladin. You made it. Look at them logs go through.
Hey, boy, sit down.
Oh, why sit down? Want to learn baseball?
Sit down.
Oh, you saw, but... People I figure to take many baths, balls, birdcage, run around very much and learn that way, not sit in a stuffy room.
Hey, boy, if I'm going to teach you, we're going to start at the beginning. Ooh. Now, come in.
It is tea you order, Mr. Paladin.
Oh, yes, bring it in. Just set it down, Miss Wong. Now, hey, boy, here's how the whole
thing... Hello, hey, boy. What you doing here?
Learning to play baseball.
Why?
Maybe get to be president of Imperial Dragon Club.
Oh.
Miss Wong.
Psycho now.
Now, hey, boy, listen to this.
Yes, sir.
Baseball is played by two teams.
Hey, boy, not going to make it.
Oh, brother, this miserable cold and my sinuses.
Haven't you heard about Dristan? Dristan decongestant tablets not only help drain all 8 sinus cavities, critical areas of cold's infection, but circulating through the blood, Dristan reaches all congested areas. In one fast-acting, uncoated 3-layer tablet, Dristan, for the first time, combines
a decongestant to shrink all swollen membranes, relieve pressure and pain.
An exclusive anti-allergent to help keep breathing passages dry and clear.
Pain relievers to ease body aches, reduce fever.
Vitamin C to help build body resistance. This is Dristan. Today, Dristan is widely imitated, but the exclusive Dristan formula cannot be duplicated. For real relief from colds, misery, and sinus congestion, there is nothing, nothing like Dristan decongestant tablets.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe. Is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Tom Hanley. Featured in the cast were Barney Phillips, Lou Krugman, Ralph Moody, and Virginia Christine. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Wow, that's Have Gun, Will Travel. Good episode called Landfall, starring John Daner as Paladin. Great cast, too. Ben Wright in there, along with Barney Phillips, Lou Krugman, Virginia Christine, Virginia Gregg, and also Ralph Moody. That guy had an attitude problem. He was very moody.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah,
over
and,
here.
all kinds of sponsors. Your favorite product, X-Lax.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa uses that regularly.
Oh, yeah, I'm using it right now.
Just
while I'm sitting here at the radio
issue
station.
Otherwise, if she doesn't. So I'm very grateful for X-Lax
being
your co-host.
Oh, yeah, me
that's
too.
From November 22nd, 1959, is heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed Have Gun, Will Travel. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. All right, well, you know what, Lisa Wolf? Huh?
What's up, Carl?
What?
What? Huh? Did you say something?
Yeah. I said that we are going to be here till 2 o'clock in the morning playing your favorite classic radio shows. And we have had a lot of people that have asked for You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. We've played a couple of them on the air. And every time we play them, we have people saying, oh, play more of those, play more, play more. And this show, You Bet Your Life, was not only on television. People remember it as a TV show, of course. But they broadcast it on radio as well. What they did with this show, it's kind of interesting. They would tape kind of a long-form version of it and then edit it down so it was sharp for TV. And they did the same thing for radio. So what you got was sort of the best of that maybe hour-long show that they would do with people, edited down to 24, 25 minutes for TV and for radio. So it was very, you know, very quick and fun.
Well, quick and fun. You know, these game shows do work really well on radio.
I agree.
And
I agree.
They are fun.
Speaking of games, we're not doing our songs anymore.
No.
You pulled the plug on that. I had absolutely no say-so on that. Curtis, I thought it was going great. I had a song picked out for her. In fact, you know what? I'm going to play, not right now, but when we start the next segment, I'm going to play the song I picked for you. Because I think it really, really...
Yeah. You know, after...
Sums you up.
After about 4 weeks, there's only so many ways that we want to sum each other up.
Yeah.
And then it becomes very self-serving.
She pulled the plug on it.
Less interesting.
I had no...
Well, I did it for everybody out there.
Because when we were getting prepped for the show...
Are you going to agree with her? Are you going to agree with her? Come on, buddy.
Let him speak.
Can I talk, Carl? Is that okay with you?
Well...
He has a trouble being quiet.
But when I contacted Lisa, I asked her, I'm like, so I'm producing for you guys this weekend. Is there any songs that you need me to get? And she's like, no, we pulled a plug on it. And I was
not
kind of
bummed. We didn't pull a plug on it.
Well, she spoke as she's ending it or whatever.
You know what they say?
I said that sucks.
Happy co-host, happy radio show. So I decided to go along with her.
I only did that so that we can move forward and do some other fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you
That's
failed.
True. She had some good ideas that she was thinking of doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got some ideas in the works, folks. So.
All right. Well,
and if you have some ideas for us, we are so happy to hear them.
I do have a song. This is sort of a farewell to this whole thing. We'll play the song in our next hour.
He can't help
it. So I had one more song that I was really wanting to play for you, Lisa.
All right. I'll allow that.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's coming up. We're going to have Gun, We'll Travel. Oh, no. We had Have Gun, We'll Travel. We'll have You Bet Your Life. And then David Harding, Counter Spy. That's in the next hour. And when we come back here tomorrow, well, one more minute, it'll be tonight. But we come back here at 11 p.m. Sunday night. We are going to play some more classic radio. We have 2 hours of classic radio with Red Rider. And what else?
We have The Life of Riley, which is great.
Yeah. Rider.
We'll be back at. I just said that. Yeah, we'll be back at 11 o'clock tonight. But for now, we still have 2 more great hours of classic radio, and we're going to be playing some games and giving away some great tickets.
All right, sounds good. Let's break for what's that, Curtis?
Was going to say, can you please read that legal ID for me?
Yeah. Oh, I definitely will. Oh, no bumper music? I guess not. We don't have any bumper music.
Back
to
WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Curtis has been here a long time. Give him a break.
You know what? I was getting Carl's music.
Oh,
for
he
you.
Was.
Well, speaking of that, you know, I can't let him one-up me here. So I'm going to join the bandwagon, and we're going to do our swan songs tonight or this morning. So I'm going to send one to you for him. We're going to just make things even here.
All right.
So that's in the next hour. You're going to do my song?
Yeah.
The song you picked for me?
Yeah.
Did you already pick one?
I'm picking it as I'm sitting here.
Yeah, I saw you picking it.
No, I'm picking all right.
Yeah. I saw you picking it all right, Lisa.
Oh, I'm picking away.
All right, so, in this hour, we're going to tune into You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. Our next hour, it'll be David Harding, Counter Spy. All right, so swan songs.
Yep.
This is it, right?
This is it.
So this is a song that I think really sums you up, Lisa.
All right, Carl.
Take a listen right now. Recognize this at all?
Yes, time? But you should have started after all this.
No, I like the whole music.
I've had nothing but bad luck since the day I saw the cat at my door. So I came into you, sweet lady, answering your mystical call. Crystal ball on the table.
Kind of scary.
I know.
When she gets mean and mad, oh.
Have you ever seen me mean and mad?
Many,
no, in real
many
life.
Many times.
Real life.
No.
I didn't think so.
No. Lisa's the sweetest person ever.
Yeah, but I actually like that song.
Yeah, that's a great song. Of course, you know, we do this for fun. You know that. I just like to pull your leg there a little bit.
Yeah, it's actually more fun.
It's a great song, though.
It's a great song. I'll take it.
That's Cliff Richard with Double
What year
One.
Was that?
Gosh, I'm going to guess.
The 90s, maybe?
No, it's probably like 70s, late 70s, something like that, I'm going to guess.
Okay.
Great tune.
It's a great tune.
Yeah.
Well, I have a great one for you. We'll play it when we have a minute.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Well, in this hour, as I said, you bet your life with Groucho Marx. But right now it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
In the Name of the Father.
Never heard of it.
All right. 1993 starred Daniel Day-Lewis.
Never
heard of it. It's a great
movie. Never heard
Well, okay. You put it on your list of
so
things to
I'm
do.
So I'm not going
to
get this right.
Well, you wouldn't get it right anyways, but okay.
That's true. The number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
We're going to give away two tickets to the Chicago Women's Funny Festival playing August 23rd to 26th at Stage 773 on Belmont.
Okay, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Call now. We'll take the third caller. You can win some tickets. We'll play the game after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
How you doing up there?
Hi there.
Hi, Maggie. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
Good. So glad that you made it through and you're playing with us. You know this movie?
You know, I think I do, but I don't remember. It's a long time.
All right. Well, you know, that's a little more than Carl. So.
Hi, Maggie.
All right. Let's see what we got to do. Roger, you listening?
I'm all ears.
Okay. Just making sure. Number one, I'm going to shoot your da. Number two, I'm going to kill your ma. And number three is I'm going to hurt your pa.
What was the first one?
So I'm going to read it one more time for you. What are you laughing about up in that screen? Number one, I'm going to shoot your da.
Da.
Da, like your dad. Your da.
Dad? Huh? I don't know.
I'm going to shoot, number one, I'm going to shoot your da. Number two, I'm going to kill your ma. Number three, I'm going to hurt your pa.
I have no idea.
I know you don't.
Maggie, what do you think?
I'm going with the second one.
Number two, I'm going to kill your ma.
Kill your ma.
Carl?
I'll go with the first one because I don't know what
I'm
a da
shoot your
is.
Da.
I don't think you can make that up.
Okay.
I don't know.
Roger?
I'm going with Maggie. I'm going number two.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
I'm going to shoot your da.
I'm going to shoot your da is right.
I was right.
You were right.
Wow.
Maggie, the rule of thumb is never agree with Roger. It never pans out.
Roger stinks at this game.
He's
even worse than me.
It's really, seriously, he's the worst at this. But it doesn't matter. Maggie, you are the winner. You have got two tickets. It's the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. It is the nation's largest celebration of women in comedy. It's at Stage 773 on August 23rd to 26th. It is the 7th anniversary of this funny festival. It is a melting pot of comedic genres. You can check it out. It's going to be great. For tickets and information, go to 773.com. The theater's on Belmont Avenue. I hope you get out there to see it. It's a wonderful festival.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Maggie. For playing.
All right. So Maggie's a big winner, and our listeners are going to be big winners now because it's time for You Bet Your Life. Now, this was a really interesting game show. You know, Groucho Marx could not figure out a way to have a successful radio show. Several times he tried to break into radio and he just was not successful. But then ABC came to him with a game show and he was kind of like, what? Now, everybody knows Groucho Marx. He was one of the Marx brothers. In fact, he was probably the most famous of the Marx brothers. And they paired him with announcer George Fenneman, and it clicked. It was just a terrific game show on ABC. It made a transition to television 3 years later in 1950, and each show offered a secret word like house or money or hat. And when the contestants, they'd banter with Groucho, talk about their life, and if they said that word, that secret word, they'd win an extra $100.
I love
as he
that
would say.
Concept.
Yeah. And they'd win money for guessing things afterwards, and it just was a lot of fun. And when these play on MeTV and stuff like that, I always watch them. It's a great show. And we have a radio episode for you now from March 30th, 1957. The secret word is roof. Here is Groucho Marx and You Bet Your Life.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word is roof. R-O-O-F.
Really?
You bet your life.
Roof.
It's Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood and brought to you by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America, who invite you to see and drive the most exciting car in the world today, DeSoto for 1957.
The most exciting car today is now delighting the far highway. It's the lovely, it's dynamic, it's DeSoto. Exciting style to please the eye, exciting power to pass them by. It's the lovely, it's dynamic, it's DeSoto.
And here he is, the one, the only...
Well, here I am again with a chance for each of our couples to win $2,000. And there's also a chance somebody might leave here with $10,000. George, who's first?
Well, Groucho, remember last week you ran out of time just as we were having a very interesting conversation with Prince Monolulu and Mrs. Dudley. We asked them if they'd come back again this week and perhaps win some money and talk to you some more. So here they are, Prince Ras Monolulu and Miss Madeline Dudley. Would you come in, please?
Glad you could both come back. Prince, you have no idea what a sensation you were. Now, let's see. You said you were a real prince from where?
Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. I'm a falasho.
I see. And Madeline, where did you say you were from?
From Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, well, that's quite a ways from where he comes from, huh? As I remember, we ran out of time last week just when I was about to ask you how you met your husband, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, how did you meet Mr. Dudley?
Well, I was a widow, and I was lonesome, and I wasn't having any luck with men, and we lived in this rooming house, and I heard this man crying, and I knocked on his door, and I said, "Mister, are you sick?" He says, "Yes, I'm sick of women." I says, "Good, I'm sick of men." And I went back to my room, and I got some tissue, and I came back, and we sat down, and we cried over together, and eventually, we got married.
You are. He was sick of women and you were sick of men, huh?
So I thought we'd make a good combination.
You make an ideal couple. Now I suppose you're sick of each other, is that right?
No, we're happily married. We've been married 8 years.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear your marriage is happy. Have you and your husband always been happy? Every miserable moment of these 8 years?
Well, we've had a few tight squeezes, but nothing to cry about.
Oh. Well, did you have tight squeezes while you were crying with your husband? Hey, I better go to Africa or I'd be a riot. No, Madeline?
I refuse to answer.
I don't blame you. Every marriage has some tight squeezes. Marriage is like a tube of toothpaste. You always hope something better will come out. Voltaire. In other words, you and your husband are deliriously happy, is that right?
Yes, he's a remarkable man, and I feel he deserves the Congressional Medal of Honor to stay married to me.
Well, in what way are you more difficult to get along with than any other married woman?
Well, first of all, I'm paradoxical, complex. Oh, I have a dual personality, and I'm a perfectionist.
You're not only hard to live with, you're almost impossible to understand. Well, Prince, let's get back to you. Are you living in Addis Ababa now?
No, I'm living in Long Beach. Hail, California, here I come.
Long Beach?
Long Beach.
You certainly like those wild, remote places, don't you? Huh?
Right, sir.
Why did you leave Ethiopia?
Well, I never leave it. I came here when there were wooden ship and iron men, when men were brave and women were gallant.
What were some of the jobs you held?
Well, from being a sailor
and remember,
sailing
the cops
ship,
may be listening, so you be careful what you say.
You see, from the sailing ship, I went to Germany and became a Menschenfresser. Yeah. I was a wild man.
Yeah.
Then I went to a
you
place...
You were a wild man?
You had to be.
A cannibal?
I was broke. They put a ring in my nose and stripped me half naked and put white spots on. I had to play a wild man to get a piece of bread and butter. And the kids run for the line.
Didn't they ever give you any Hasenpfeffer or Wiener Schnitzel?
Nein, hab nicht gehabt, nicht zu fressen.
Sie haben keine Wiener Schnitzel?
Sauerkraut, Sauerkraut. Sauerkraut in der Wurzel.
Yeah. Now, what else did you do besides then scaring the people in Germany?
Then I went to Vienna and they put me in the painting school, and I went to a place called Milan and Turin, and I was in the all-winter painting, you know, and the nude and semi-nude, and all the children painting my feathers.
The students?
Yes, they paint me.
You paint students?
No, they paint me. They
oh,
pay me for
model,
doing it.
I see. You're the model, huh?
I was the victim of their intelligence.
I see. And then where did you flee after this?
I went to Yugoslavia, and there I start singing. I couldn't sing a whistle, so I sang, John Brown's body lies a-molding in the grave.
This must have killed him in Yugoslavia.
All the children sing glory, glory, hallelujah.
In Yugoslavia?
In Yugoslavia, in Belgrade, and a place called Agram. But the worst thing I had was when I came to a place called Sweden. I became a lion tame in my life. And when I went in the cage, they saturated me with something called acificitor. It smelled terrible.
Yeah, but it kept the lion away. Yeah.
When he smelled me, he turned his tail, see? One night the lion attacked me. Wow! I tried to be brave, but my knee bent it. And was just saving my life jumping over the cage. So I've had a very good life.
You know what? Well, it's been a kind of a sedentary existence. Quiet, full of solitude. You know, after listening to you, for the first time in 10 years, my job seems almost legitimate. Are you still engaged in hoodwinking the public, Prince?
Oh, no, I have an honest profession now, sir.
Uh-huh. What is it?
In England, you're called a turf advisor.
Turf
in America, you call him a racetrack tout. Here you cannot work, but in dear old England, Great Britain, I can work. I have a very big business.
What about, have you been married?
Oh, I married 6 wives, and as long as I got money, they stop. And I ain't got no money, they give me the soldier's farewell. Goodbye.
You're not married, no?
No, I'm looking now for another wife. I'm looking for a wife that don't drink and smoke. That one that like to travel a race course and go to all the great places and see the great things of life. I might find one.
Well, I hope you do.
What about me, baby?
Well, she's called for.
Oh, she's called for.
In order to get her, you have to cry.
Oh, no, I laugh. I'm a different man.
I can see why he's got 6 wives.
He hasn't got any right now. Well, we could go on talking for hours, but I'm sure you're both more interested in winning some money. So let's see if this education that you've acquired in these round-the-world tours is of any help to you tonight. Now, you selected the biblical quiz. I'm going to ask you some questions. If you miss 2 in a row, you're out. If you get 4 in a row right, you win $1,000. And before you answer, talk it over with your partner. You ready?
Yes, sir.
What was the name of the princess whose dance caused John the Baptist his head?
John the Baptist Salome.
Salome or Salome is right.
1 right, 3 more right, and you'll have $1,000.
Yes. Now, what key city of Palestine was conquered by Joshua?
Joshua, the Jericho. Jericho.
Jericho, and the
Jericho.
Walls came tumbling down.
And the
down.
Wall came tumbling
yes,
down.
Yes, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho.
Whoopee!
Jericho, Jericho. Oh, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho. And the walls came tumbling down. Yay!
And you have 2 right.
All right.
2 more right, and you'll have your $1,000.
What happened at Mount Ararat that made it famous?
Moses went to make the 10 commandments.
Oh,
and the fire came up. Well, what do you say?
Now you ask me.
Well, what did you say?
It flew the coop when the bell rang.
It's where Noah landed the ark. All right. Here we go now. What country in the Bible was known as the land of bondage?
The land of bondage.
Talk it over now.
Land of bondage. Egypt.
Egypt is right. Egypt. Didn't flew the coop that time, no. Did it?
And you're back on the right track with 1 right.
All right, who is the man from Bethany who was raised from the dead?
Lazarus is right.
2 right.
Now, talk it over before you answer.
He don't want to look in another woman's eyes.
Look at him, Prince. Look at him. On Moses' death, who succeeded him as the leader of the Israelites?
Aaron.
Talk it over.
Mm-hmm. His brother, you know, he's...
His brother, Aaron. I followed the woman once in my life.
His brother, Aaron.
When the Moses died.
No, I'm sorry, it's Joshua.
Joshua, you see, you tell me Aaron, you see, you're wrong.
Well, you're back to 1 wrong again. Don't get the next one wrong.
All right. Who was the... Who is the reputed interpreter of the famous handwriting on the wall?
Nebuchadnezzar.
No, that was at the feast there. He says...
Well, then, right on the wall, take it, halam, le kalam.
Who interpreted the writing?
They sent for one of the leaders. Well, who do you think? quick. Joseph, she said Joseph.
Yeah, she's wrong. It's Daniel.
Daniel, there you are. You said Joseph.
You're out of the game.
We don't want you to go away broke, so I'm going to ask you one more question for $100. Now, no coaching, please. You ready?
Yes.
If Monday was named for the moon, which day of the week was named for the sun?
For the sun, according to the ancient...
No, according to this.
Sunday!
Well, thanks for being with us. Sorry you didn't win more. You bet your life. Thank you. Each got $100. Thank you.
Now, here's automotive expert and dynamic engineer, J.J. Bibberly. Not that one. This one.
Young man, do you know what you're singing?
Hmm? Me? Oh, sure. It's de lovely, it's dynamic, it's,
Well, go ahead. It's de solo.
Oh, I knew that.
Then why didn't you sing it?
Because I wasn't sure it is.
Wasn't sure what is what?
De Soto is.
De lovely?
No, I agree with that. It is a beauty.
Then?
It's the dynamic part I'm not sure of.
You haven't tried De Soto's new triple-range torque flight transmission, have you?
Oh, no.
Well, then try mine. Just push the button.
Which one?
The one marked D for drive. The number 1 and number 2 buttons are there in case you want to select a lower range. But when you push the drive button, your DeSoto goes through 3 power ranges automatically.
Here we go. Boy, it sure takes off. When does it shift?
It has shifted. You're driving in high gear.
But I didn't feel it shift.
Well, that's because there's a third power range in the 57 DeSoto Torque Flight. Makes operation so smooth. More economical, too. And more powerful.
It's great, Bibberly. Will you join me in a duet?
It's a pleasure.
It's de lovely. It's dynamic. It's DeSoto.
Try it yourself, folks. See the new DeSoto at your DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And when they show you the dotted line, sign on it.
All right, there is the first portion of You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Appreciate you. It is 12:35 here on a Sunday morning. Happy Sunday, Lisa.
Happy Sunday, Carl.
We are listening to a very funny broadcast of You Bet Your Life from 1957. Secret word is roof. Here is Groucho Marx now in the conclusion to You Bet Your Life.
Groucho, Mona Young and Dr. Paul Papineau are waiting to talk to you, so folks, you can please and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life. Say the secret word, and you'll divide an extra $100. It's a common word, something you have around the house. Dr. Papineau, your name is very familiar, aren't you? A bartender in Beverly Hills?
Not yet. For the last 27 years, I've been general director of the American Institute of Family Relations.
Well, I agree 100%. All relations belong in an institution.
Not only getting there.
Yes, and what is your racket, specifically?
Well, we help people to straighten out their marital difficulties, or preferably educate them before they get into marriage so they keep out of trouble.
In other words, you're one of those foolhardy fellows who take a husband and wife who are battling and make them patch it up. Is that it?
Huh?
I'm surprised you're still alive. Well, Doc, we have one of the most fascinating subjects in the world here, and I think it's time we talked about it. Don't you agree?
Perfectly.
Fine. Well, young lady, what are you doing after the show? You're Mona Young, huh?
Yes.
And where are you from, Mona?
I'm originally from Oslo, Norway.
From Oslo in Norway?
Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I've been in Oslo, but I've never been in Norway.
You
Why
like
did you leave
there?
Norway, Mona?
Well, I was selected Miss Norway, so I came over here in 55, pardon me, for the Miss Universe contest.
You really were Miss Norway, eh?
Yes, sir.
That's quite an honor.
Yeah?
You know, I was miscellaneous one year at Santa Monica. They threw me in the garbage dump. Are you interested in any particular man, Mona?
Yes, sir.
Strike one. Are you married?
Yeah.
Strike two. Are you happily married?
Yes, sir.
Strike three and I'm out. How did you meet your husband?
Well, that's a long story. One night when I was working...
They're all long stories.
I was working at the Moulin Rouge at the time.
You were working at the Moulin Rouge?
Yes, there were 12 girls from the contest who were being introduced on the stage.
How'd you meet your husband, Mona? That's what I
I'm
really
coming to it. I had...
I'm going away from it.
I had two dates one night, and then...
Two dates?
Yes. And my husband-to-be had also two dates, one with Miss Texas and one with Miss Michigan.
Oh.
So he asked me for a date, and I said yes, and we took off.
Oh. Were these girls present when he ducked them and took you out?
No.
What happened on your first date with this bounder?
Well, like I said, nothing happened, actually. I took my girlfriend, Miss Sweden, along as a chaperone.
Oh. You took her as a chaperone? The last date I had,
yeah.
We didn't have a chaperone. The girl I was with trusted me implicitly. All she had with her was a revolver. Well, the man you married must be a real Casanova, huh?
He's real cute. He's 6 feet four, and he
What's
has blue
his...
eyes, and he's a Texan.
Mm-hmm. What's his secret way with women, in addition to being from Texas?
I wouldn't know. Except that...
You say a Texan. He's a Texan. What has being a Texan got to do with it? I mean, how does a Texan differ from, let's say, a fellow from Utah?
Well, they're no different
Idaho.
From any other Americans. They're just a little more stubborn.
Well, if you're as rich as they are, you can afford to be stubborn. Well, let me get this whole thing straight. Your husband had dates with Miss Texas, Miss Michigan, and Miss Norway all on the same night, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's the way with those Texans. They do everything big.
And better.
When they... When those Texans play Monopoly, they use real girls. Now, Dr. Popinot, let's find out some facts about you. Are you married?
Yes, been married 37 years.
I see. Can you remember way back 37 years ago when you first met your wife?
Vividly.
Would you say it was love at first sight?
No, there's no such thing as love at first sight. That's just a hallucination. If you think you're in love at first sight, it's because somebody makes a deep impression on you, so you're really just in love with your own sensations or you're in love with yourself all the time.
This is how you reunite couples?
That's the thing.
You know, this reminds me of a quotation from George Bernard Shaw that impressed me so deeply that I memorized it. Listen to this, Doc. You probably have heard it. He said, when two people are under the influence of the most violent, most insane, most delusive, and most transient of passions, they are required to swear they will remain in that excited, abnormal, and exhausting condition continuously until death do them part.
Interesting.
Now, what do you think of that, Doc?
Up to a point, I agree with it.
Now, where did you depart from his philosophy?
About second word.
Oh, I see. Well, Doc, what are some of the main causes for unhappy homes?
Well, unwillingness to try to make the thing go, but the difficulties cluster in half a dozen different points. Without regard to the order of importance, their lack of any normal social and recreational life. And, of course, they just have to build up on it and have a circle of good, wholesome friends. Then there's the problem of the in-laws, which is a very serious one. The
really?
In-laws break up more marriages in the first year after the wedding than any other one factor. That's pretty tough for us in-laws to think about.
Mm.
Then there's the problem, financial problem.
Well, in what way do the in-laws break up the marriages? I don't understand.
By interfering, criticizing, and trying to run things from the wrong side, according to the point of view of one partner or the other.
Is usually the bride's mother that's responsible?
More frequently nowadays, the man's mother. In the old days, it was the bride's mother, but there again, we've progressed.
Doc, I'd like to see you in action. Let's analyze Mona's marriage to this wolf. Aren't you an animal doctor?
Well, I'm not a veterinarian, no.
Well, Mona, would you mind if he analyzed your marriage?
Not at all. Go ahead.
Oh, I'd have to have something specific to work on.
Yeah, okay. Well, how's your marriage working out, Mona?
Oh, every marriage has its highs and its lows.
I guess so.
We got over the worst and we really
got over the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Doc, go ahead.
Well, she hasn't given me anything specific to work on yet.
Can't you give me something specific?
Pardon me. Well,
I thought you were an expert, Doc. A real expert is a fellow who creates problems where none exist.
Well, that's been just a fellow a long way from home, and I'm right here in Los Angeles.
Well, I'm sorry you're so happy because this gives the doctor nothing to work on, isn't there? Anything at all that you can complain about?
I got plenty of troubles. Well, I did have.
Well, what are some of the difficulties you encountered when you first got married?
Well, see, when I first got married, I felt sorry for all the milkmen, you know, that come from door to door. So I couldn't say no to them.
Well, that's a good beginning, all right. You felt sorry for all the milkmen?
Oh, yeah.
And so what happened?
Well, I couldn't say no, so I ended up with milk from 7 different companies.
Well, Mona, I have one of the finest lines of milk in California now. What is your home address? In addition to having 7 milkmen trying to break your door down, do you have any other problems?
My husband, being from Texas, he loves hot biscuits and gravy. And I like to sleep late, so I don't get up, usually. Once in a while, I do.
Can't you cook the biscuits on your electric blanket? What have you got to say about a girl, a child bride, who is too lazy to get up and fix her husband's biscuits?
I think that the husband is entitled to his biscuits, and that's one of the few times in the day when they can be together and talk over the plans of the day. Breakfast is one of the few times it's available in the ordinary family.
You're letting me in.
He's right. I think the doctor's right.
My husband is in the audience, and tomorrow I'm going to have to get up.
Doctor's right. What you said about a couple meeting in the morning for breakfast, I think is true. There's nothing that lifts a man's morale like the sight of his wife at 7 in the morning. When he's sitting at that breakfast table with a half a hangover, and she comes waltzing in there with a faded kimono and her face plastered with cold cream, and her eyes just 2 slits, and 1 toe sticking out of the end of her slippers, there's nothing that will consolidate a marriage like that sex. I'd like to go on talking to you two because this sounds like it could go into a very interesting avenue, but the time has come to play You Bet Your Life. So let's see how much money you can win. You think you have learned anything from this doctor's advice here tonight?
Well, I have to see how it works out.
Let's see. Will you let me know the following day?
Well, I'll try.
You can tell me when I'm delivering the milk. All right. Now, from our list of 20 to 21 categories, you have chosen general information. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great warrior. Now, I'm going to ask you some... I'll ask you some questions. If you miss 2 in a row, you're through. If you get 4 in a row right, you win $1,000. Now, before you answer, discuss it and answer between you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call the paper showing the family tree of a purebred animal?
Pedigree chart would be your name for it?
We'll stick that.
Pedigree is right.
You have 1 right, 3 more right, and you'll have your $1,000.
What is the state flower of Kansas?
Sunflower, no question about that.
I know how you knew that, because you voted
there.
For Alf Landon.
I was born in Kansas.
Did you vote for Landon?
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah. You and who else?
I don't know anybody else. I think Mrs. Landon did.
Okay, the drachma, D-R-A-C-H-M-A, is the monetary unit of what country?
You saw it in Greece, didn't you, Mr.
Young? Don't snarl at me,
old girl. No, I'm not.
If you're going to look at me, I want you to look at me with admiration and not with not with nausea on your face.
But you agree with me, it's Greece.
Drachma, that's right. You don't have to go any further.
He knows something.
1 more right, and you'll have $1,000.
You know, if you win this, he's liable to bring the milk tomorrow morning. Now, what island was settled by the Bounty mutineers?
Pitcairn Island.
He didn't need you at
you
all.
You got it.
You got 4 in a row, so you win $1,000.
Now, wait a minute. You won $1,000. You can keep it and quit, or you can come back later and try to double your money. You may even get a chance at $10,000. So go over there and sit down and think it over, and if we don't see you later, thanks for being on the show. All right, George, let's find out what our last couple has decided.
All right, Mona Young and Dr. Papineau.
You come back in here, please.
Thank you.
You're just as pretty as you were 30 minutes ago, Mona.
Thank you.
Are you still in love with your husband?
Yes.
In that case, you won't win a quarter.
Well.
You've won $1,000 so far. Now you have a chance to win a lot more. Maybe even $10,000. Or you can stop right here and keep your $1,000. If you decide to try for the big money and fail, you wind up with a total of $500. Now, what are you going to do?
We're going to try.
You're going to go ahead?
Mm-hmm.
You're going for the big money. All right. Now, get together and pick a number from 1 to 10 and then spin the wheel. If any number besides the one you pick comes up, this question is worth $2,000. If your number comes up, this question is worth $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
What number do you want?
We decided on number 1.
Well, give it a flame.
Yeah.
Wish me luck.
Number 3?
1.
You picked number 1 and it came
yes.
up 6. Well, you're a long way off. So this question is worth $2,000. In Gulliver's Travels, the country of little people was called Lilliput. For $2,000, what was the name of the country where the giants lived?
Now we have it perfectly well. Drop big neck. Drop big neck. Drop big neck.
What is it?
For Brobdignag.
Brobdignag is right, and that's a tough question. I'm glad you won it.
You deserve it, too.
Well, you've won $2,000. What are you going to do with your part of the swag, Mona?
Believe it, I'm going home to Mama in Norway.
You going to Mama?
Yeah, for a little while.
Well, by Joe, I'm going with you. And what are you going to do with yours?
Going to put a second bathroom in the house so when our grandchildren come out, we can take proper care of them.
Oh. You mean they've never bathed yet?
When they were so small, they could go in the kitchen sink.
I see. Well, congratulations for being with us. You bet your life.
And thanks a million.
Be sure to tune in again next week, same time, same station, for Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life. Don't miss the Chrysler Corporation's big TV show on another network. And don't forget Groucho's TV show, also brought to you by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America, who invite you to visit your neighborhood showroom today to see and drive the most exciting car in the world today. DeSoto for 1957.
And when you go in, tell them Groucho sent you. So long, folks, and remember, it's the lovely, it's dynamic, it's DeSoto.
On the eve of National Boys Club Week, DeSoto proudly salutes the Boys Club of America in their important work of building boys into better men. You Bet Your Life, transcribed from Hollywood, is produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jack Meekin. This is George Fenneman signing off for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. You Bet Your Life is heard by our armed forces throughout the world.
That is You Bet Your Life from March 30th, 1957, secret word Roof. And that starred Groucho Marx along with George Fenneman there. And that was sponsored by DeSoto, 1957. That song and that commercial was so convincing. I think I'm going to go out and buy a DeSoto car.
You're going to have to look long and hard for that one.
Is there any 2018 DeSoto cars out there? Probably not.
Well, I think
not.
You should go look.
But
check that out.
I actually wouldn't mind a 1957 DeSoto. It probably has like a Philco radio in there. And, you know, they used to put Philco car radios.
Yeah.
Our fun fact that is up on our Facebook page talks a little bit about Groucho Marx. And that fun fact, I got directly from the horse's mouth. Irving Brecker, who created The Life of Riley and was an Academy Award-winning writer and wrote Bye Bye Birdie. He also wrote Meet Me in St. Louis. And he wrote some of the Marx Brothers movies. He was very good friends. Irving Brecker was very good friends with Groucho Marx. And Groucho said to him, can't you write? And Irving told me this story at his apartment in California when we were going to go to lunch. He licensed me the Life of Riley shows. And he said, you know, Groucho was my good friend, and he would ask me to do stuff. I would want to do it for him, right? And he said, can't you figure out something? I want to get into radio. And he said, yeah, I'll come up with something. I'll create something. So he created a show called The Flotsam Family, The Flotsam Family. And it was The Life of Riley, okay? But it was prior to The Life of Riley. But it was the same character, you know, a guy who, you know, was a family man, just like Life of Riley. And they made a recording. They did an audition disc with Groucho as the lead guy. And they pitched it everywhere. It didn't sell. And I asked him, why do you think, I mean, with Groucho Marx, why do you think it didn't sell? And Irving said, the consensus was, you know, people knew who Groucho Marx was. And the consensus was, yeah, he's a huge name, but he's not a family man. He's not a guy we would believe raising a son and was a devoted family man, worked as an airplane riveter, you know, and had this situation comedy.
And did they write that with him in mind for that role?
Well, what happened is he came up with this idea, like which he later called The Life of Riley,
right,
and cast William Bendix. But originally, the show was going to be called The Flotsam Family. And he did this because Groucho asked him to do it.
Yeah.
But nobody, you know, none of the sponsors ever would. There was like, we just don't see Groucho Marx. As much as we like Groucho Marx, we don't see him as a family man. So it didn't sell. So he kind of shelved that project. And then a few years later, he was watching a movie. I can't remember what movie it was. Might have been Lifeboat or something. And he saw William Bendix. Maybe it was the Babe Ruth story or something. I don't know, because he played Babe Ruth. And he saw him and he said, gosh, you know, that guy would work on the Flotsam Family. And then he changed the name because he had pitched it as the Flotsam Family.
Yeah.
So he changed the name to The Life of Riley.
And that's a bad name anyway. Flotsam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He meant it like
not...
a person, floats from here to there. And Irving told me this story, and I found it so fascinating because you would think Groucho Marx is starring in a radio show would sell, but he said nobody believed it. So he cast William Bendix in The Life of Riley, and it became a huge success. In fact, we're going to play a Life of Riley episode when we come back here tonight. But right now, let's take a break. It's more of the WGN Radio Theater after these words. All right, it is 12:58. And we're going to go to news here in just a moment. When we come back from the news, we have a good sort of spy adventure, a lot like, you know, Dangerous Assignment or The Man Called X. It's called David Harding Counterspy. I'm not sure we've ever aired one of these, but we have an episode from 1951 that's coming your way in our next hour.
And we have a song for you.
Oh, that's
we'll end
right.
This. We'll end this game
My
properly.
Swan song.
Once and for all.
That's it. We're going to end this game
what
properly.
Is it? Can't wait to
Guess
find
you'll
out.
See.
So it's a song you think sort of sums me up.
Sums things so. Up.
Well, I look forward to hearing
Great.
That. And I want to remind all of our listeners that we have an app for you. It's free. It's a classic radio shows app. And there are 10 free shows when you download the app. Lisa has this app, right, Lisa?
I sure do.
Yeah, you downloaded it to your phone.
I did.
And you can get your free Classic Radio Shows app in the Google Play Store or the Apple Store. The easiest way to get your free app is to log on to WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com, and then scroll down to the Classic Radio Shows app banner and click either the Google link or the Apple link. Don't miss out. Get your free Classic Radio Shows app today. I think you'll like it. All right. Did you know that the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 1 o'clock in the morning. Time for the news. Here's Roger Batty.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
What? What's the matter, Lisa? What,
one of my ears just went out.
Why?
I'll just plug it in
somewhere
else. Oh,
one of your ears went out. And my cans. Those are called the cans.
I know, but it feels like an ear at the moment.
Oh.
Anyway, this is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater.
It is.
And
yeah.
We have...
Lisa says she's not having fun tonight on
the
show.
I did not say that.
She's
like, no, that's
not
what... I'm
not really having much fun tonight on the radio
show. You just made that up.
What did you say to me?
I said, we haven't had a lot of time to have fun talking to each other on this radio show.
Okay.
It's just been a busy night.
It is a busy night. All right, so we have an episode of David Harding Counter Spy from 1951. You're going to like it. Really good spy drama. And we're going to also play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. But we're going to do our swan song. You have a song for me, Lisa?
I sure do. This is the final song for Carl Amari. Let's hear it. CeeLo Green, who, of course, I met. I have a picture with him.
Can't play this song on the air.
This is the clean version.
This is the
Forget You.
Yeah, but...
Not the hardcore version.
Trust me, Carl, we mean the other version. That's what I thought.
I can't really talk about the other version because it's a swear word. I don't want to do that. But that's... That was the intention, I think. But not really.
This is such a great song.
It's a great song. CeeLo Green is great.
You know, I could sing this whole song. I know every word of this song.
That's okay.
There.
I'm going to post a picture of me with CeeLo on our Facebook page. I have that. I had a lot of fun interviewing him.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I interviewed him.
He is just one of the most talented singers, I tell you.
This song is amazing. Such a nice guy. We laughed. We had so much fun together. I'm going to post that picture on our Facebook page right now. Anyhow, that was the end of the music game, and we're going to move on to other games.
So what are you saying?
That's it.
What are you trying to say?
Like, forget you.
Forget you. Hey, forget about it.
Exactly.
Forget about it, Lisa.
Forget you, whatever
All right.
you say.
I like
forget
that song.
It.
I like that
I do
song.
Too.
All right. So it's time to play Cat's Pride. Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Million Dollar Baby.
I got this.
You say that every time.
Got this.
All right, we'll see.
I got the last one, didn't I?
You got one tonight.
All right. Usually
one out of three would be what you would get if you closed your eyes and picked.
If I just threw the dart at the dartboard with my eyes closed?
That would be it.
What is the prize?
Two tickets to the Chicago Women's Funny Festival.
All right, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Win some... tickets to the Funny Festival. Call right now and play the game with us. It'll be the third caller. 30. No, that's 30. 03.
You're going to put me through a rough night, aren't you?
I want to go. I want the 30th caller,
no,
Curtis.
Third caller.
Why would you do that to me?
Call right now. We'll be right back. And I got to say this, a nicer
guy. It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
I'm just telling you something.
Tom Skilling may be one of the nicest persons I've ever met.
Well,
he's
I've never met him.
He's just the nicest man.
So I'm going to take your word for that.
Congratulations, Tom Skilling. 40 years as Chicago's very own. Love that guy. All right.
So we're back. We're going to play a little Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. We had a caller off the air, so we're going to play on the air, and then we'll let you know what happened.
Okay.
So we're going to play with Roger and Carl, and then we'll let you know we had Grace call in, and I'll let you know what she said. So you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Roger?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Number one. This is Million Dollar Baby. Great movie. Number one. Fighting, it turns out, is a never-ending battle. Number two. Stop fighting battles that are already lost. Number three, there's magic of fighting battles beyond endurance.
I'll go with number two.
You like number two?
Yeah.
It's numero uno.
You like number one?
Yeah.
And Grace got it correct.
And she picked what?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you yet. Let's play it.
There's magic of fighting battles beyond endurance.
So that would be number three.
Wow.
So you guys were both really close.
Well, wait a minute. I was closer. I had number two.
Yeah, you were really close. But, Roger, I think you're...
Yeah, you're closer to number two, all right.
But I try harder.
We had Grace, who called in from Chicago. She knew the right answer was number three. And she won two tickets to the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. It is running right now. Not right now, but August 23rd. To 26th at Stage 773 Great Theater. You can check it out. Get more information at stage773.com.
All right. Very good. Well, Roger, we stink at this game. But you know what? We keep trying. We give it the old college try every year.
Yeah,
time, right?
I certainly do.
Yes, we
do. Rah, rah, sis, boom, bah.
All right. It's time for David Harding Counter Spy. This was an espionage drama. Came to radio in 1942, lasted all the way to 1957. That's a long time on the air, Lisa. Don McLaughlin played David Harding. He was the chief of the United States Counterspies, a unit engaged during World War II in counterintelligence against Japan and Germany. It wasn't a real agency. This was just made up for the show. The United States Counterspies was a fictional government agency devised by the program's creator, Phillips H. Lord, and Mandel Kramer played Harry Peters, who was Harding's assistant on there. And during World War II, the plots revolved around threats from Axis powers. And after the war ended, Cold War threats took precedence. Later, they addressed all manner of illegal activities. There were two Columbia films in 1950, and those starred Howard St. John in the title role. It never made a transition to television. We have a radio broadcast for you now from January 14th, 1951. This is called The Captured Contact. Here's Don McLaughlin as David Harding, Counter Spy.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Counter Spy.
Washington calling David Harding, Counter Spy. Washington calling David Harding, Counter Spy.
Harding, Counter Spy, calling Washington.
United States Counter Spies, especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad. These counter spy reports to the American people are brought to you each week at this time. Now, the case of the captured contact.
Hello, Mr. Harding? Mr. David Harding?
No, this is Mr. Harding's assistant, Harry Peters.
I am calling from Baltimore. I must speak to Mr. Harding in person. Did he not receive my letter?
Who is this, please?
I signed the letter only with the name Roland.
Just a moment. Harding speaking.
Mr. Harding, this is Roland. You received my letter, no?
I'd like to know who you really are.
Full details I cannot give over the telephone, but I give a name, Dr. Maximo.
Dr. Maximo?
Yes. I have been in your country lecturing on bacteriology. My real purpose was something else, and now I realize I have been making a terrible mistake for years.
Yeah?
I can correct it only one way, to tell everything to the United States counter-spies.
Well, you're only 45 minutes by train from Washington.
Oh, no, I dare not move from this hotel room. My life.
What hotel?
The Gainsborough, room 819.
Huh?
I beg you to come, Mr. Harding. What I must tell you is of the first importance.
Well, I'll see about it, Dr. Maximo. Goodbye.
Mr. Harding... young lady... This is Mr. Jones in room 819. You have a house detective. Mr. Blaine is his name. I believe my life is in danger. Would you please ask him to come to my room at once?
And I say to you, comrades of this International Congress for Peace, our chief enemy in the world is America. Its ruling circles are composed of nothing but warmongers, imperialists, slaves of Wall Street, and enemies of the peace-loving democratic nations of the world.
Well, that's the end of the record, I guess. Be glad, see?
What's the date on that? July 12th, 3 years ago. Made by our Paris attaché during one of those fake peace congresses held by Iron Curtain followers in Paris.
Well, I'll play a bit of our phone conversation with Dr. Maximo tonight.
Yep.
Hello? Mr. Harding? Mr. David Harding?
No, this is Mr. Harding's assistant, Harry Peters.
I am calling from Baltimore. I must speak to Mr. Harding in person. Did he not receive my letter?
The same boy.
Who is this, please? I signed the letter only with the name Roland.
Yes, that's the same man. Don't you think so, Peters?
Sure, it's the same fellow.
Well, here's our file jacket on him. Roland Maximo, graduate of the University of Catania in 1911 at the age of 22.
Makes him 62 now.
Yeah. Became full professor of medicine specializing in bacteriology in 1919.
Right after the First World War.
Secretly joined the International Revolutionary Movement the following year.
And that's the man who's been in this country for months lecturing from coast to coast.
On bacteriology.
Routine reports on his lectures here, Chief. They say he'd end every lecture with a plea against bacteriological warfare. In the same breath, accusing us of planning to use it. I'm amazed he got away with it, Dave.
Now, this was all before the Cold War turned hot. Well, Peters, if this man is ready, as he says, to turn against his masters in Catania, we'd better go see him.
Oh, we can still easily make Baltimore by midnight, Chief.
Well, I have the Baltimore field office send over a man meanwhile. But let's hop.
You, mind my asking Mr. Jones what kind of danger your life's in?
I have been threatened. Have you the time, Mr. Blaine?
It's 10 past 11. I oughtn't to be sitting here in your room all night. I'm a house dick. My spot's in the lobby, keeping an eye out for bookies.
Bookies?
A horse player and other kind of unwelcome riffraff.
Huh.
You racketeer? Some kind of hotshot?
Hot shot?
Yeah. Or say, hey, maybe you're a squealer. You're going to rat on your pals and they want to knock you over.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Blaine. You might say I'm going to squeal and that my pals want to knock me over.
Hey, what's that? It's fire. There's fire in the joint.
Mr. Blaine, wait.
I say, there's fire. I gotta go see. You hear them all yelling?
Mr. Blaine, I beg you, do not leave the room.
You wait. I'll be right back.
Mr. Blaine!
Hello, Ellery. What are you doing in the lobby? I wanted you up in room 819 with Dr. Maximo.
When I got here, Mr. Harding, the whole hotel was in an uproar. They said fire, and the fire chief wouldn't let me in, counters fire not.
Fire, Ellery?
Eighth floor. Just now they found out it was a false alarm.
False alarm. Come on, room 819. Come on, Peters, Ellery. Call the house detective, Peters.
No use. Three bullets.
I'm Harding, Dr. Maximo. Who did this?
I did not see. Door opened. I don't know. More important, my confession. You must catch my contact. Will lead you to everything.
Your contact, yes.
Name?
Yes, his name.
George.
George what? Where?
Never told last name. Only George. Small man.
Yes, small man. But what city? Where?
Left eye.
Left eye? What about it?
Left eye.
They've silenced him for good, Mr. Harding.
Yes. And we've got to find a man called George with something unusual about his left eye. One man among 150 million people.
Listen, Eddie. This is the rest of what Mama writes.
Yeah?
It came this afternoon, special delivery. Next week your father has to be in Buffalo for a meeting of his fraternal organization. And if we could drive through Columbus, we could spend the weekend with you and Edward.
The weekend? Well, I can stand it if they can, baby. Your old man's a pretty good kegler.
Kegler?
Bowler, fancy word.
Oh. What kind of a day at the shop?
Blueprints, as usual. What's for supper?
I almost forgot. You going to be on the road again next week?
No, hon, but I've been talking with Sam about a good chance for a blueprint shop over in Cobbsville. Going to be a big industrial town. I thought we ought to open up there, get in on the ground floor.
Cobbsville? Gee, we don't know anybody there.
Well, not definite yet, anyway. And anyway, what's for supper?
Salisbury steak.
You mean hamburger.
Oh, maybe that's Claire Siegel. I saw her at the market. She said maybe she and Herbert...
No, I'll brush her off.
Only do it nicely, Eddie.
Hello?
Hello, George.
Oh, yeah.
This is Arthur.
Oh, hiya.
I have just had some good news from Baltimore.
Yeah?
You won't have to move to Cobbsville. You won't have to leave Columbus. You're quite safe here.
Oh, fine.
I shall be in touch with you soon for further assignments.
Okay, Arthur.
Don't use my name. Goodbye, George.
Yeah. So long.
That wasn't Claire Siegel, was it, Ed?
Hmm? Oh, no, it was, a fella I was in touch with on this Cobbsville business, but he says forget it. How soon is that Salisbury hamburger going to be ready?
There are the lights of Washington, Chief. Well, it's obvious, Peters. Dr. Maximo's ex-comrades found out he intended to talk to us and pulled that fake fire alarm as a cover for liquidating him. Now, the next most important man to get is this George.
With the strange left eye. How do we find George?
Well, as Dr. Maximo traveled around lecturing, posing as a friendly scientist, he must have been reporting on the progress of American research in bacteriological warfare.
Then George must have been a contact who met him from time to time on his travels.
Yeah, that's it. The moment we get back to Washington tonight, we'll lay out on a map the exact itinerary Dr. Maximo followed.
We've got the itinerary laid out, Chief.
Quick work. Get any sleep last night after we got back?
About an hour.
Lucky you.
Here's the map room, Dad. Now, each pin on the map here represents a stopping place. Now, the dates of arrival and departure for each location are on the flags.
Land in New York, August 29th.
Mm-hmm. And here's the typed-up schedule of the modes of travel that Dr. Maximo used.
Uh-huh. Itinerary took him coast to coast and back. Stopped in, 22 places.
All either universities or industrial towns with important research labs.
I'll tell you what, Peters. We'll prepare a directive to our field offices in these 22 localities. We want the details on everything Dr. Maximo did. Everybody he saw. In each place.
Maximo was a bacteriologist, Chief. His information was technical. Now, it follows that the contact had to know something about bacteriology. Maybe he had to make copies. Microfilm. Or blueprints.
Yeah, right. Well, list all bacteriologists in the country. Every research laboratory with employees, present and past, even the clerical staffs. Then we'll cross-check that list against the list we get of people Dr. Maximo met. And somewhere among all these people, we've got to find George.
You are listening to the case of the captured contact on Counter Spy.
That's definitely an organ, Lisa. I think it's a Hammond organ.
A Hammond. I think you're right.
I think it's a Hammond organ, yeah.
You're always right, Carl.
With Autolite. you should have been the Autolite girl.
I know.
You would have been
if somebody asked me to be the Autolite girl, I would do it. I can't do it now.
What do you mean you can't do it now? Giving you an audition.
No,
to be
I
the
had
Autolite.
This audition. I did a great job.
You're
There's
always
no reason
right
to re-audition.
With Autolite, you can do it. Come on.
I know I can do it.
Come on, Lisa.
There's no reason
our
to re-audition.
Our listeners want you to do it.
No, I can do it.
All right. Well, anyway, that's the first portion of David Harding, Counter Spy with a Captured Contact from 1951. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. And it is now 1:36 in the morning, Sunday morning. And when we come back here at 11 p.m., we will be on from 11 p.m. till 1 in the morning tonight. And we will have Red Rider, which is a good Western adventure. And then we'll have The Life of Riley, right, Lisa?
I think you're living The Life of Riley, Carl.
Yeah, Life of Riley was a very funny series.
Yeah.
William Bendix. You know, when it moved to television, that first season on TV, William Bendix was not available to play the role. He was under, I think it was an RKO movie contract, and Irving Brecker was left without a star. So he cast Jackie Gleason. So I think that was Jackie Gleason's first role on television. So it was just the first season of The Life of Riley. Jackie Gleason played the role, and then Irving Brecker, you know, brought back William Bendix because he was out of his contract by that time. And then, of course, Jackie Gleason went on to star in The Honeymooners. Yeah. And there was other television shows he did as well. But we'll have that for you when we come back here tonight at 11 p.m. But right now, it's the conclusion to David Harding, Counter Spy.
The chimes are your invitation to a bright Sunday evening lineup over most of these same NBC stations tonight. Tallulah MCs another gala broadcast of The Big Show. The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show brings you more delightful adventures. And then Hedda Hopper presents dramatized stories of the stars. Now, back to Counter Spy.
Good morning, Dr. Phillips. My name's Taylor, United States Counter Spies. We're making up a national directory of all personnel in bacteriology in case of a national emergency. Now, I wonder if you'd mind helping us out.
Hello, Professor Thorne. My name's Ellery, sir, United States Counterspies. I've just arrived in Locust City. I'd like to come out to the university laboratory.
Good afternoon, Mr. Zachary. Taylor, Counterspies. You've got a large technical staff here in your company laboratories, and we're making up a directory.
That's fine, Dr. Loomis. Now, if I could see your past...
Oh, much obliged for your cooperation, Professor Marks. Just one more thing. About this man, George Rackett, who worked here as a laboratory technician 3 years ago. Can we examine into him a little more, sir?
There's the whole list, Mr. Harding. The names only.
Well, the facts about them?
On a card file out in my office. That'll be punched for automatic sorting.
Well, have we got the dope on which of these were actually in the area of Dr. Maximo's trip at the time they made it?
Yes, Chief. That's one of the classification symbols.
Uh-huh.
Now, the cards will be ready for the machines by early tomorrow morning, I'd say.
All right, we'll run them off then.
I'm setting the machine now, Chief.
Well, first, anybody whose first, middle, or last name is George.
Right.
And second, who were in the area of Dr. Maximo's trip?
Symbol 7.
Third, those with eye trouble, the left eye especially. All right, you.
Of course, even at this speed, Chief, it'll take some time. There are thousands of cards. Seventy-eight cards called out, Chief.
All right, now classify by areas and shoot them out to the agents in charge. But, Peters, the trouble is, George is most likely not a real name at all, but a code name.
That's a cheery thought.
Morning, madam. My name's Taylor. I'm from the New Orleans City Directory, checking on all inhabitants. I understand you have a tenant here named George Sperry. Works for the University Laboratory.
Excuse me, Mrs. T.J. George. I'm from the local civil defense organization. My name's Ellery. We're looking for volunteer aircraft spotters.
All very interesting, Chief. Adding up to nothing.
Every one of those 78 have clean records?
Well, one fellow used to work at a lab in Kansas City. He turned out to be a minor embezzler from Philadelphia. Another man was an escaped convict. Two others were aliens who entered the country illegally. 11 of them met or heard Dr. Maximo, but not one has a single questionable association.
And all of these, named George, who were in that area, had some trouble with the left eye.
Well, it kind of washes out there, Dave. Most of these people wear glasses, and most of them, the left eye is weaker than the right. One man's practically blind in his left eye, but he's 71 years old and stone deaf.
Well, this eye business bothers me. It's the chief identifying fact that came to Dr. Maximo's mind. Peters, instead of looking for George by name and profession, let's look for him through the eyes.
Oh?
You mean through oculists, opticians, eye doctors, clinics?
Well, if a man's left eye is so noticeable, it's fair to suppose that he consults somebody about it.
This job gets bigger and bigger, Chief.
Well, incidentally, include the manufacturers of artificial eyes on that checklist.
Okay. The eyes have it.
Hiya, baby.
Hello, Ed. Tough day?
Six of one, six of the other.
How about a movie tonight?
Hi. I'll get it, huh?
Okay, do that, Eddie.
Yeah, hello?
George?
Yeah.
This is Arthur.
Oh, hiya.
An important job for you, George, in Washington, D.C.
Oh?
A meeting. It's very dangerous, but it's necessary. I am leaving here tonight. You get a train tomorrow afternoon.
Well, when does the customer expect to see me?
Tuesday, but...
Tuesday? Well, then what's the point of my going tomorrow? I'll leave Monday.
You're supposed to take orders without question, George.
Well, you know I've got this trouble with my eye. I've got an appointment with an eye doctor Monday morning. Been trying for weeks to see him.
Well, in that case...
Where'll I find you?
You are to go to the Hotel Finley. Register under your own name. We'll meet after that. That is all.
Hotel Finley. So long. Hon, Washington next for me. Big deal.
Good morning. Name's Taylor, Counter Spies. I understand you're the leading optician in Kansas City.
Yes, Mr. Strauss, we're checking all oculists in this section. In case of national emergency, any man with medical understanding might... Oh, by the way, have you any patrons with really serious trouble in the left eye?
I know you're a busy man, Dr. Choate. I just arrived in Columbus this morning, and I understand you're the top eye man in the city.
40 years, added young fellow.
Well, this is highly confidential, Dr. Choate. But have you a man patient who's a bacteriologist?
Bacteria... No, nothing like that.
Maybe a man who once worked in a research laboratory on bacteriology?
No, not as far as I know. Nearest thing to a lab worker on my list is Edward Stringer.
Huh?
His left eye... Well, it's really strange. Muscles of the lid are so weak, his left eyelid's practically closed all the time. Only he's no bacteriologist. Understands a lot about medicine, for a layman, mind you. But he's a partner in the Red Arrow Duplicating Company.
Red Arrow Duplicating?
Yes, photostats, blueprints, and so forth.
Oh. Thanks very much, Dr. Choate.
From Harding, Washington, to C.S. Taylor on assignment, Columbus. Continue check on Edward Stringer. Peters and I flying to join you.
This Edward Stringer's been married 7 years, Mr. Harding. No children. Five-room, two-story frame house on Hawthorne Road. Age 33. Wife, Alice, age 30, from Utah.
Yes, go on, dealer.
I've had no chance to get a look at Stringer, but Dr. Choate says his left eyelid is almost fully closed all the time.
Oh, anybody would remember that.
Yeah, well, go on, Taylor.
Well, Stringer and a man named Samuel E. Carpenter together own a blueprint and photostat shop, number 16 Harper Street, in business 4 years. Stringer's traveled a good deal, according to Carpenter.
Well, you didn't explain your interest, I hope.
Oh, no, sir, no. Well, what I did is I arranged with the airlines here to appear as their representative.
Oh.
That way I could ask how much the partners traveled and where to and so on.
Smart gag, Taylor.
Well, according to Carpenter, Stringer does the traveling for the pair, handles good-size orders outside the city. Sam Carpenter mentioned half a dozen cities, and every one of them was on Dr. Maximo's itinerary.
Well, does Stringer know anything about bacteriology?
Well, Carpenter said that that was one of their business assets, Mr. Harding. Stringer majored in bacteriology at Hillman College. He never graduated, but kept up his interest.
I see.
You see, that makes their shop useful to firms with technical documents to be duplicated.
Oh, that's a good job, Taylor. We're getting hot, Peters. One more visit to Sam Carpenter. He'll know where Edward Stringer is, and we close in.
And now there's a new and very important assignment for you, George. Right here in Washington.
Where'll it be, Arthur?
I'm soon to go home. You are to take my place as chief of contacts. Today and tomorrow. As the others arrive in Washington, they will come here to you. In one pose or another. And there is only one matter.
Yeah?
That eye of yours. It is so easily remembered.
I guess so, and it drives me nuts myself, but I got a doctor back in Columbus. He says he can fix it. Take maybe 6 months, eye exercises, maybe even an operation, but...
Hey, you expect anyone, George?
Maybe it's a chambermaid. I'll tell her to come back later. Oh, yeah?
Edward Springer?
Yeah.
Mind if we come in? Come on, Peter.
Hey, just a second.
Close the door, Peter.
Got it.
We're United States counter spies, Springer.
We'll have to ask who this other man is.
Springer, you have a right not to speak at all.
I know, but, well, it's all over, isn't it?
Yes, it is, George.
Okay. I always expected to get caught. This man has been my boss. He's called Arthur. That's all I know about him. I'll tell you everything else you want to know, all about everybody, even help you catch him.
You fool. You're a traitor.
You've got it wrong, Arthur. He's a traitor to us, not to you.
Me a traitor? I've been working for peace.
What?
Make the other side just as strong as the United States, and then neither side will dare go to war.
Oh, Stringer, how sick can you get?
I've got something there, Peters. It's a question whether a man like this belongs in a penitentiary or a hospital for the mentally ill. Anyway, both of you, you're now under arrest by the United States government.
You've just heard another counter-spy report to the American people, brought to you each week at the same time. Next week's report, The Case of the Double-Crossing Defender. Tonight's counter-spy program originated in New York, was directed by Marks B. Loeb, dramatized by Paul R. Milton, and featured Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer. Lionel Rico speaking. Counter-Spy is a Phillips H. Lord production.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Lisa, that was... Ooh, I talked over the
you
NBC channels.
You always do. You just can't wait. You get so excited.
I talked over the NBC channels.
You just talk over.
I'm sorry about that,
just
folks.
Just talk.
That is David Harding, Counter-Spy, January 14th, 1951, The Captured Contact, starring Don McLaughlin. And, yeah, I'm sorry I talked over the NBC chimes there. That was a program created by Phillips H. Lord. And you know what's the other show that he created more popular than this, Phillips H. Lord? He created Gangbusters, and we play that every once in a while, too. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.